Holly Haynes, welcome to the Workplay Podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I feel like today is going to be such a treat because you're going to really dive into a philosophy that I really believe in, which is not using social media as like the forefront of your business to drive revenue. Although it can, let's go under the hood, see what really is going to drive the revenue. And I just think that so many people come into even the Workplay Method thinking that social media is the end all be all. It's going to make their business grow for the next year. And we always like to reframe it because we know it's not so much about that at all. I want to get into all of that with you. But first, what is your business and how long have you been in business?
Yeah. So my name's Holly Haynes. I'm a business strategist. I have been in business for 4 years. So I started in 2020. But I have a 22-year corporate strategy background. So I did consulting with Fortune 500 companies for a really long time and decided pre-pandemic, it was like January 1st, I'm gonna start my own business like we all do, not knowing what was going to come 2 months later with the pandemic and all the things. And the very first thing that I did was started a podcast, which is where this, I call it my antisocial method came from, because I was working full time and I didn't have an audience. And you always hear, sell a $17 offer and you'll make $1 million. And I was like, but I have two people on my email list. That's not going to work for me. So I had to figure out like a different way of growing and scaling in a way that really aligned with our family. At the time, I had twins who were in kindergarten. And I always say, if you are in the middle of a pandemic with young kindergartners and are also building a business and working full time, like, it was pure chaos. And so this methodology really helped me create community and share content in a way that really aligned with our schedule and build an income at the same time.
I'm curious to know where this knowledge came from. Did it come from your corporate background? Were you like just throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing what stuck? How did you figure this out?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Like I said, my corporate background was business strategy. So I was literally hired to come into like big Fortune 500 companies and be like, why isn't this working? Figure it out for me. So I did have that skill set. But as we all know, like, building our business online is very different than, you know, a big company, right? Like, it wasn't necessarily apples to apples. But the other thing is, and this was sort of throwing spaghetti at the wall, is I didn't have a lot of time. So I could listen to people on Instagram or TikTok was just taking off, but like, I couldn't post 17 times a day because I was working full time, or I was in meetings with like our CEO and CFO. And I can't be like, hey, I'm going to go step out or hide in the bathroom to go post this reel, because I just couldn't. So I had to figure out a way where I could get my content in front of the right people that did not require me to be on my phone 24/7. So I leaned into my strategy background, was like, hey, Holly, like, you've done this before. Like, let's think about it. Like, what's your end goal? And how can we do this a little bit differently so that you don't have to be on your phone all the time? But also, I have young girls, and I know the impact of being on social all the time. And I think as a business owner, we see it as well. And so I was like, there has to be a way that you can grow and scale where you feel good, like, you feel good about what you're doing and you feel in control. And I think that's where like the strategy piece comes in, is I can tell you the steps to take and we can control that, right? Like, we can't control the algorithm. We can't control how many people like, we can't control how many people sign up. But if I can control the steps on a consistent basis, that's when I really start to see, I would say, momentum. So it was a mix of my background, but also I couldn't do it the way that people were teaching because I literally just didn't have time.
Why do you think business owners in general feel, as of right now, like they have to be on social media, like they have to do this? It almost feels like when their business is maybe not doing what they want it to do, it almost feels like social media is then this like this thing that they latch onto, or is, oh, I got to just do more reels, or I have to post more. Like, could you walk us through, why do you think people do that? Why do you think they gravitate towards social for?
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick win, right? So I always say there's really two ways you can build your business. You can build your business where social is your entry point, and a lot of people are very successful with that. Or you could build a business where social is, I say, like your magazine cover, your sidecar. It's like the second act of your program, right? If you're a circus, like it's not the main event. It's like the second act. It's like a bonus. Or you could just not be on social at all. But I think what we see, like the external piece is, because I am on social, like I post reels, you'll see it, but it's all repurposed. Like 99% of it comes from somewhere else. It's planned. It's scheduled. I'm not on my phone. So you see that and people are like, I want that. If I do that, I'm going to get the same results. We're programmed that we want these like super quick wins. Like we think that if we're going to post something or share something that immediately a million people, maybe, you know, 10 are going to sign up. And I think people just have to realize that it doesn't work that way unless you have a huge audience, right? So we're speaking to, you don't have a large audience and you're really trying to grow and scale in a way that makes sense for you. And people see, oh, if I just post this, then I'm going to get this result. And so it feels like it should be easy. And then when we get into it, we realize that there's actually a strategy behind it. You actually have to be consistent. It's like the same thing. So to me, the choice is, do you want social media to come first as like, that's the thing that's going to drive your business? Or do you want it to come second where maybe it's a little more controllable by doing some other actions?
So what's like the pros and cons of each one? Because like, yeah, for sitting here or the two groups of people, what's the advantages, disadvantages of each?
Yeah, I mean, you can be successful with both. So I always say like my antisocial strategy does not mean that you're not social. I think you have to really think about where do you want to spend your time. For me, like I don't have a TikTok account. I did for a minute. It's not my thing. It makes my head spin. I don't have a lot of time to scroll or figure out like, what are the trends here? What are the trends there? So I ask time first, like how much time do you have? The second thing that I ask is like, where do your people hang out? I call it your home base. For me, because I did work in corporate, a lot of my clients either come from corporate or they still are in their corporate job. They don't have a lot of time to scroll on social media. Yes, they're on there. I think we probably all are, but where are they actually taking action? For me, it was podcasts because people are listening to it on their way to work, or maybe they're checking their email. They don't really have a chance to respond, but I'm like in their world. And so I decided that I was going to pick a home base where I thought my ideal client, I call them unicorns, hung out. And it wasn't social, but it also matched my personal goals. So I don't think there's pros and cons to both, but I always say, what do you want your schedule to look like? What are your personal goals in terms of building a business? If you love social and you are like so into making reels, like I would never tell you not to do it. But for me personally, I don't want to dance. I don't want to spend hours looking up like the most recent trends. Like I'm much better writing something or speaking on a podcast. And so it's a mix of figuring out what your strengths are, what you want your schedule to look like, and then what's that entry point or home base for you?
That's so good. I see so often from workplace members, successful business owners that are in the method that I've interviewed on this podcast, so many of them have not led with social. And yeah, they even have huge followings, right? But they've always led more on, and we'll get into that side of it, the other side, the other business side of all of this. But it's just interesting how success often leaves clues, right?
Yeah.
And so many of those successful people, even if they have a huge following, they're not using social at the forefront. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And most of the time you probably wouldn't know, like, unless I talked about it openly, you would probably look at our social account and be like, oh, wow, she has like a decent amount of posts, but all of our posts mm-hmm. come from emails or podcast repurposing. There's probably not one that I've done in the last 6 months that has been written from scratch. And so it's just really figuring out where do you want to share your content. And I also think it's more of this concept of let's just slow down to speed up. Let's slow down and think about who do we serve? Where are they actually coming from? I mean, I've had clients that have a local, like I'm going to go to a coffee shop strategy and sell out their programs, as opposed to I'm going to spend hours online. But most of the time, people don't slow down enough to really think about that. I mean, you could just do it just from listening to this podcast. Like, okay, where did my last handful of clients come from? How did I attract them? Was it because I spoke at an event? Was it because I was on a podcast? And then how can you make that sort of work for you?
I love that. That's like very tangible advice that you can literally implement. Yeah. I know that you have your own methodology on how to build a business without social. Walk us through what that looks like, because so many Workplay members, as I've said before, they come at the method from a social media perspective. I need to get on social, which is why I need visuals. And we all have to reframe this by saying, well, actually, no, you need visuals for the other things in your business that are driving revenue, and then that will go on social. So I'm so excited for you to just walk us through what this actually looks like when you don't put social at the forefront of your revenue driving activities.
Yeah. So the first step that I will say, and you guys probably do this as well when you plan photo shoots, is like, who do you serve? And so the way that I sort of approach that is, if you could tell your neighbor, because I joke that my neighbors have no idea what my husband and I do all day. If you could tell your neighbors what you did in two sentences, could you do it? So if you listen to my episodes or introducing myself, I'm like, I'm a business strategist. I help you build a full-time business on a part-time schedule without the social drama. So they know that I am a strategist, and I say social drama because it intrigues people. They're like, oh, what is that? Right. So you've got to really nail that down. But I think in today's world, to make it like even more tangible, is you have to really niche down, but it's more than niching. I think you have to like micro niche. Who am I serving? I'm probably like, I'm 45. So I'm probably serving women who are a little bit older, who have had a career for a while, who are in corporate, who are really craving a schedule where they're not stressed out all the time. And that's who I'm talking to. So it's really just like slowing down and thinking about who that is, because that's going to take you to the next question of the framework. And that is like, where do your people hang out? Which we talked about a little bit already. Most people do hang out on social, but I would argue that there's probably another space that they hang out on. And so how can you leverage that space and leverage your time better, right? So there's tools like SEO from a content perspective. There's Pinterest. Pinterest is actually a search engine, right? Like you can use that. There's things that you can do with email, which we'll talk about in a later step. But what are your people doing? Most of my people were listening to podcasts. So that's the strategy that I used. And then step three was what I say is content repurposing, and how do you do less better? So for me, I had to really lean into, okay, my top of funnel is our podcast, right? So that's where I have tons of free content. People can connect with me. I'm leveraging that to push people into my world through email, which we'll talk about that in a minute. But I really believe that your content has to include some sort of free something that's more than a PDF. Like people are just done with freebies, right? They know that they're going to get a PDF with some pretty graphics. Like I want you to take your free stuff and just make it wow. Like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that she just gave me all this information. So as an example, my people hang out on podcasts. So we created free, totally free private podcast, which goes through this whole framework in detail, gives you homework, and teaches you how to implement this methodology. So when people listen to it, they're like, Holly, I can't believe you did all of that for free. But I was like, well, I want you to get to know me. They can hear my voice. I'm now emailing people back and forth with little micro topics, right? Going back to step number one, it's like a micro win, a micro topic. I'm in there holding you accountable. You can write me back, which is like a side note, write people back, ask questions. A lot of times I'll send people like a Loom video back, and it'll be like a video of me talking, and I'll be like, hey, this is a great question. I would recommend you doing this. And they're like, I can't believe you sent me a video using my name. So it's like all these little things where you can like really dig into these really small wins, and getting to know people on a really like relationship type level, but it is automated a bit, right? And then taking that content and thinking about how you can repurpose it. So for us, one podcast episode gets made into 10 different pieces of content. And for the Workplay members, this is where all those photos can come into play, right? Because if you look at all of our social posts, it's all B-roll that I did at a photo shoot or with my clients. It's literally in a folder in my phone, and I schedule it like 2 or 3 weeks in advance, because I know that our podcast episodes are coming out. We have a theme for the week, and we're using all of those photos, which makes it look like we have this cohesive brand and we're online all the time, but we're not because we're scheduling things. So that's step three. Those are big steps. The last two steps are really how can you leverage communities to scale? So really digging into, can you go on different podcast episodes? Can you volunteer in the community? Are you in like a network where you can ask questions? And I always say, give back, ask questions, ask how you can help people, because you never know who they're going to introduce you to and what that looks like. It's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, right? Where we're all connected. Like I know my friend Heather has worked with you guys. She dropped your guys's name into my world. And then we're in a networking group where it was brought up again. And I was like, hey, I really think we should chat. And so you just never know who you're going to be introduced to. And so there's a whole strategy of how to network, but network in a way where you're helping people, but it's also helping you as well. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last step of the whole puzzle is email, and really leaning into email. This is, again, a great opportunity where you can use visuals. I always love like a good picture in an email, or you can point out to something on your website where maybe you have people just relate to actually like hearing from you and seeing from you. And so really digging into how can you connect with all of these people that you've invited into your world, but connect on a sort of reoccurring basis. So I know I went through that fast, but the goal is that it's very strategically thought through, and you're really thinking about how can you take the things that you're creating for free and then like 10x it, so it's on all these different platforms without you having to do more work.
Oh my gosh, I love this. First of all, just launching a podcast, I know exactly what you're talking about. You take these snippets and then it's like you have a whole content strategy already.
Yeah, you will never need to write content ever, like ever.
Right. Why podcasting works so well for a content strategy is because you're actually getting curious about people and the people that you serve, but also people that can serve you. And then you can collaborate on the back end there. I mean, like, plethora of options for people who are not into podcasting. Cause I was very against podcasting.
Yeah. So like, I mean, it's a big, it's a lot of work. Podcasting is not a small undertaking.
I was like, oh my God, everyone has a podcast. But when I realized it could be a repurposing content machine, I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer for us.
Yeah.
But for those of us that are not into podcasting, maybe talking through things with other people or themselves is like not their thing. What are some ways that you can still create content if you don't have a podcast?
Yeah, no, this is a great question. You don't have to have a podcast, although I would highly consider it. A lot of times people will say, oh, well, there's so many podcasts out there, but it goes back to what I call micro audiences. If you get 50 people to listen to an episode or download an episode, that's 50 people that are like hearing your voice and hearing your inflection and hearing your stories and hearing me talk about homeschooling my twins during a pandemic. Like, you're going to relate to people so much faster, but we'll come back to that. But if you don't have a podcast, there's a lot of different things you can do. One, you can be a guest on other people's podcasts. And my trick here is do it with intention. So make sure that when you're speaking on other people's podcasts, you're speaking about a topic that aligns with what you do. If I came on here and I talked about, we grow dahlias randomly, like flowers. But if I was going to do a podcast on growing flowers, it would be horrible because I don't really know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm just learning it. It's not my area of expertise. So you want to make sure that you pick a topic that you're aligned to. But going back to that sort of antisocial method is you at the end, and you'll hear me do it, like you want to pitch something that's free that aligns with what you talk about. And I always like to say, hey, I covered this really fast, which I already said. I can't cover all of this in 45 minutes, but I have this awesome private podcast that you guys can download, and I'll be behind the scenes answering your questions. So it's not like this hard sell. It's a, you can tell a story about why they should listen to it, or whatever insert your freebie is. And that's going to help people sort of move into your world. That's one way. Another way is that I like to find people that have lookalike audiences. So a great example of this is I have a friend and she's a stylist, which would be great for photo shoots. And she's like, Holly, I have this great idea. We have a free challenge. It's called CEO Week. And it basically helps you create themes to be productive in your business. And she was like, I'm going to create a capsule wardrobe that goes with CEO Week. So not only do people know what they need to focus on in their business, but they're going to have this really cute outfit that they can wear so they feel super confident. And so she was on our podcast and she created a very specific freebie for our audience. And then we ended up doing like a collaboration where I was sharing it because I was like, well, this is genius. I love clothes. I want to feel good. It fits with my audience. I don't teach style, right? So it works. She doesn't teach business strategy. So we ended up doing this like lead magnet swap, but it was in this like really cool, like collaborative sort of way. And so I think sometimes we make it really complicated, but if there was another business or lookalike audience where maybe your audience was interested, you could just do a quick lead magnet swap and talk about each other's thing and why they like it. And you're building on the back of other people's businesses. Another suggestion that I love, I say email is like having a cauliflower comeback. I feel like a couple years ago, cauliflower was like having a moment. I don't know if it's as popular right now. I feel like maybe something else has replaced it.
It was everywhere.
Yeah. So like people are busy and they're like, oh, I don't want to sign up for another email newsletter. But what if your newsletter wasn't called a newsletter and it was like, I don't know, something really fun. Like we call ours a strategy stack. And it's a 1-minute read. It's a super short email every single week. We send it on Sunday night. And it's like, here are 3 things you can do in your business strategy right now. I'm not selling anything. It's just really quick value. So I feel like there's a way that you can move into people's worlds and just how can you help them? Because to me, if you can establish that base, right? So I would say, obviously, podcasting, lead magnet swaps, any sort of like quick email that's consistent, right? You've got to be consistent. But the kind of thing where like one of my favorite food bloggers sends every Thursday an email with her recipes of the week and a grocery list. And it's genius because she knows that people are getting ready to go to the grocery store over the weekend. I read it every single week. It's super niche down. And then the last one I would say is probably more organic focused, but go to coffee with somebody in your community. There's so many entrepreneurs and so many people who are connected to so many people. So this past summer, I had a goal where I was like, I'm going to go to coffee once a month. I don't know who it's going to be with, but I'm going to find people in my community that I can network with. And the outcome of it was really cool. Like I ended up speaking at a couple of events and met some new people. And so it can be super easy of, okay, I'm actually an introvert. I don't love like talking in really large groups. It makes me nervous and I get anxious about it, but I'm like, I can do it once a month, right? Like 30 minutes, a great coffee date. So those are some things that I would try. I would say the key is you have to be consistent with it. So if you're going to do podcast guesting, make sure you are telling your story of where people can learn more, but be consistent with it. Or if you're going to do a lead magnet swap, make a goal to do one once a month, right? Or have a newsletter where you're sharing other valuable resources and your audience expects it.
I feel like collaboration is so underrated. Networking is underrated. I feel like 2020 happened and then everyone's like discounted the power of networking.
Yeah.
It's kind of slowly getting back into it. People are slowly getting into this idea of, oh, wow, other people can help me grow my business. But it's just interesting to me how that is that people just like, oh, it's not, you know, online. I don't need to do it. For those people out there, and I know there are people out there listening to this that just equates what I call vanity metrics to business success and revenue. So follower accounts, likes. And I think vanity metrics can be very specific to a business. Like something that's vanity to me might not be vanity to you. But what would you say to those people who are like, oh, if my social media account is not growing, then my business can't grow?
Yeah. So I'll go back to the example that I shared of micro audiences. And that is if you have, let's just say 10 people that love you, like they're going to buy every single thing that you do. That is way more powerful than 10,000 people who look at your reel and do nothing. And so honestly, I do look at metrics. I always say facts, not feelings, like look at the facts. But for us, I don't really look at the social metrics because I know that's not where my people come from. What I do see happening is people will listen to a podcast, or they'll hear me speak, or they'll download one of our freebies, which we're using SEO to drive traffic to our website. Then they'll go to social to be like, well, who is this Holly person? And like, what is she? Right. So, and we all do it. Like, it's like we Google Instagram to be like, who are we? So I try not to get stuck on those metrics. The metrics that I do think matter is like, how many new people are on your email list? Or what are the number of people that are looking at your sales page? And where are they clicking? Like, there's so many tools that you can use to figure out the actions that people are taking. Or if I have 100 people in my freebie nurture sequence, how many people actually bought the thing on the other side? Like, to me, those are the metrics that matter. And you don't have to have really big numbers to know if something's working or not. And then you can use those numbers to then improve the actions that people are taking.
Yeah, it's almost like a reframe of
it. Totally is.
Because as you were talking, I was just trying to think in terms of someone who has that belief. And it would just be like, okay, well, I don't have enough leads on my lead magnet. That's why I'm not getting sales from it. And the reason why I don't have enough leads is because I don't have enough followers, because my only strategy was to post on social media. So it's almost like I would push you to ask yourself, what other strategies are you doing outside of social media to help get you leads? And I think that's a bigger conversation. It's a higher level conversation that I think, especially when you're first starting out in business, you don't even realize that is a different conversation.
I would even argue, so I call it, what's your client attraction plan? But I would argue as a new business owner, like, you could literally have coffee with someone and sign them up as a one-on-one client and not post one thing on social. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting the way that you shared it, but I always say, what's your client attraction strategy? At least have one that's not social media, right? Because the goal is that we're constantly bringing people into our world. And then we have systems behind the scenes. We've got an email strategy. We've got a nurture strategy. We've got a lead magnet strategy where that's doing the work for us, which makes sales so much easier because you are consistently giving value and value and value and value, which we hear all the time. But I'm questioning, like, how much value are you really giving, right? Like, how good is it? Like, I want it to be spectacular. So that when you do have something that comes out, people are like, well, that's a no-brainer. Like, of course I would do that.
If someone comes into the WorkPlay method and they're like, well, the only reason why I came in here was to grow my social media account.
Yeah.
What? And we're just like dropping a bomb on them. They're like, wait, what? I need to focus on all these other things. How would you structure their year inside of the WorkPlay method with this antisocial strategy? So just to give you a rundown and everyone listening, inside of the WorkPlay method, you have quarterly shoots. So every 3 months, you're creating specific visuals for specific projects that you're doing in your business. We always want them to be revenue driving projects so that you can really see an ROI with your visual marketing strategy. But I'm interested to know how you would advise a WorkPlay member to think about their shoots if they are no longer really thinking about it from a, like, okay, I gotta take this picture so I can post it on social media.
Yeah. So to me, again, it's not, so antisocial doesn't mean you don't use social. It just means you're thinking about it in a different way. So we actually do quarterly photo shoots. And the reason I do them is because it saves so much time. So I literally get all of my photos and all of my videos and I put them in a folder on my iPhone, and it literally says like quarterly, winter, spring, whatever season photo shoot. And then when we sit down, we say, okay, what are we launching this quarter? Usually we have one launch a quarter. That's like the income producing activity. Okay, what content goes with that? So then I go into my antisocial strategy and I say, okay, well, what's my like mechanism for bringing new people into my world? Is it podcasting? Is it podcast guesting? Is it a new web page, sales page, insert all the things? All those things, you use photos. I actually just listened to, I can't remember what podcast it was, but it was talking about the power of using a photo of yourself and how people relate so much more to actually seeing a face, right? So when you guest somewhere, what do they ask for? They ask for a photo, like have something that like reflects who you are in this season. But also going back to step three of the antisocial methodology is you can have a content repurposing strategy where you have all the photos and all the B-roll and all the things just like ready to go. So we typically send 2 to 3 emails a week out. I take those emails and I make them into reels. It takes me maybe 10 minutes. I have a template in Canva that has the reel cover. I take my photos that are already done. I move them over to the template. I take my B-roll from the photo shoot where I put some words on it that is the same as the email. I'm not changing anything. I'm using the same words and I just share that email content as a reel. So there's so much that you can do with really good photos and videos and things like that. But I also, and this really has nothing to do with antisocial, but I love a good client experience. And to me, when you have really great visuals and photos, even behind the scenes, like if you're launching a course or maybe like we have a mastermind and we send like gifts and things like that, like all of those require photos. And to me, it just looks so much better and it's so much more tied together, especially if you have a higher ticket offer where all of the cover photos match. I love matching things. So somebody else might have a different opinion, but I just feel like if you are working with someone and you can see like their brand aesthetic and you can see how things are tied together, and maybe you do notice, now you all will, that like, hey, that email Holly sent was also that real, but I know she wasn't on her phone, but that's a really cute picture, right? Like you start to get to know me and our, you know, our clients a little bit better.
We get so sucked into the online world. We forget that just because your business is online, you operate online, doesn't mean that it's not like walking into a restaurant, like a hole in the wall restaurant where it's like the wallpaper is like peeling off and it's just like, yeah, the food could be really great, but the experience and, and the environment at which that creates is very different than maybe like a high-end restaurant. And so when you apply that same ideology to your online business, you start to see that, wow, okay, if I actually package this correctly, if I actually have the wallpaper of my online course on the inside look really nice, people are actually going to feel that. That's an environment that you're creating. So I love the idea of almost like, this is just my brain working, but it's like, if you know that you're launching a course, like you can have your launch visuals, but then what about the specific visuals that are going on the inside of your course? Yeah, like those could look very different and look very intentional as well. And it's like, all right, that's two different quarterly shoots. I'm interested to know, because you're a big repurposer.
Yeah.
Right? Why don't you just repurpose your photo content or your video content? Why do you continuously create quarterly content and do quarterly shoots?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I mean, one, I feel like I change my hair color all the time. So I think it's important that your photos represent who you are at the time that you're doing things. And I also feel like if you're posting something or sharing something that, I don't know, maybe it's winter and it's summer, it doesn't vibe. So that's probably not like a profitable standpoint. But there's a couple of things of the reason why I like it. One, I feel like whenever you do any sort of strategic planning, and I would argue that that includes photos for your business, it makes you think about, well, how do I want to feel? What do I want to look like? What's the vibe that I'm trying? It's honestly like just part of your overall content plan. And then I would also say we're usually launching something once a quarter. And so I want the photos and the branding to represent like what we're launching. We just redid our podcast cover. So I wanted that to reflect like where I am now versus where I was 4 years ago. Not to say that the photo was bad 4 years ago, but a lot has happened in 4 years. And so it's just like a representative of real life. I think I also go back to like people relate to you as a person. And so I think when they see updated photos, it's like, oh, what is she doing now? What is she working on? It's like a little like peek behind the scenes. But also going back to that email strategy, there's a lot of things that you can do in email that will actually drive revenue. And that includes like, what's your email signature? Is it an updated picture? Do you have how to work with you at the bottom of it? If you send out a newsletter, like what's the branding at the top of the newsletter? What does that look like? And is it consistent every single week? And if you change it, people will notice because they're like, oh, she has a different color top on. What is she doing? What does that look like? And so there's really fun things that you can do with pictures and branding that just take your content to another level as opposed to just plain text.
So good. It's so good. This has been my life's work for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
Of just being like, hello, like the visual matters.
Yeah, but it saves so much time. I mean, honestly, yeah. Deep down inside, that's why I do it, because I literally have a folder on my phone where it's like, okay, these are all the photos. If we're going to update our website, I can just pull from those. If I have somebody helping me with emails, they can pull from those. If we're doing graphics inside our community, they can pull from those. It just is so much easier to not have to worry about, like, did I shower today? I need to take a selfie, right? It's just a different vibe.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's funny. So many people stall the things that they want to launch because they don't have the right visuals, or the visuals aren't matching with what they're selling, or, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're so right. It provides an easier system on the back end for getting things out there. Yeah. I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
As Workplay members or potential Workplay members move through your antisocial strategy, what's one piece of advice that you have for them for doing quarterly visual content plus having an antisocial strategy?
Yeah. So I would say lean into who you are. I actually shared it must have been an email. And I was like, you don't have to copy and paste everyone else's business model. There's so many different ways that you can grow and scale. And your photos should obviously reflect who you are and your personality and what you like and your brand colors and all of that. But so should your business strategy. Like I said, if you love posting, go for it. If you don't want to, let's figure out a different way. But I recommend that you have at least one thing that is working for you off social, right? So that way, if social goes away or you are having a day where you don't want to do it, right, you at least have something else that's supporting you, that's doing the nurturing and even the selling for you. And I think you can really lean into, what do you like to do? What feels good to you? Do you like talking? Do you like writing? And really develop that strategy to work for you and what you can be consistent with. I think if you love it and you're excited about it, you'll be consistent with it.
That's such good advice. Thank you so much, Holly. Where can everyone find you and just see all of the things that you're doing and creating?
Yeah. So I'll give you my last antisocial school tip. And that is, when somebody asks you that, be very specific and give one thing. So I want you to go to hollymariehaines.com/social. And it's a free private podcast where I walk you through all the steps that we went through today, but in a little bit more detail. And then behind the scenes, I'm giving you homework and asking you questions. And we just added a ton of new bonuses on there. So you can take a peek at that and let me know what you guys think of it.
Ooh, you can see it all in action. I love it. Thank you so much, Holly.
Yeah, thank you.